Good morning.
Good morning.
I was running about 20 seconds late. I had to wash my hands after spending time with Roberta. Seems like hand washing is high on her priority list. Doctor, are you with us? I see you. Oh, there you are. Great. And it looks like Dan is ready to get started chopping at the bit, huh, buddy?
I just got onto the share thing, that's all.
I think everybody's here that needs to be here. Let's go ahead and get started.
Okay. What I'm trying to show in the presentation here is like what it's going to look like for maybe the next 6 or 5 months out there into the future, and what revenue sources that we have from various different sources, and then how we might use those, and how this budget, at least right now, got prepared was with input from Carrie and Scott Kalman, so that we have some idea here. And I think at some point we need to, we still need to look at how Roberta looks at this thing too, but it does give us a pretty good indication about, what type of funding we have and kind of maybe, the number of FTEs that we can look at least through the end of the year. And one of the things that, that did change in this presentation, the one you're looking at right now, I didn't know at the time that when I put this out, we received this information, I believe on Monday or Tuesday, something like that, that FEMA, or actually the declaration date, actually was extended till October 23rd. So that pushed out my presentation as far as being able to fund some of this with FEMA funds through October. Now, I didn't do it as accurate as far as the 23rd, but I did do it as far as a month is concerned. But it does give us flavor out here. So anyhow, so what you're looking at is probably the latest, greatest. And then I also did one that's in your package that was related to looking at all the way to December 31st, which may be a possibility with FEMA also, that they would fund things till the end of the year. So anyhow, we have
Dan, can I ask a quick question? So I on the recovery meeting the other day, that Mo or somebody had said that the thing had got extended, or that they'd still closed out the incident, but they were extending it 60 days. So
they extended the declaration till October 23rd, and then they gave us 60 days after October 23rd to submit a request for reimbursement.
Oh, okay. Well, great.
That's what that meant. Yeah, and that was the same, like before it was, November 27th, September 20, wait a minute, what month am I, July 27th, and we had 60 days after that to submit an RFR, or a request for reimbursement.
So okay, yeah. Great. Thank you.
So we have a little bit of room there. And who knows whether or not they're going to, this thing's changing all the time, whether or not they're going to extend it again. And potentially, yes, maybe not. I don't know. But anyhow, we started out with how we created this budget is what we looked at was expense side. And so we have up here, we have the public health director. There was a thought about putting an assistant director into the budget. We didn't go very far with that idea. But then we have this administrative assistant, Gina C, that was put, that was Gina Colicchio, who basically did quite a bit of work there at the start as far as administration of that department and stuff like that. So we ran her separately through that because we're going to use that particular position against some of the individual specific grants from CDPHE. And then also we have the public health administrative assistance that was budgeted. And then we have the new position, that's a 0.5 FTE that we can actually use either through FEMA or through the care relief fund, however we want to do that out there. And then we also have the public health nurse that was budgeted. And then we have, this was a request that was given to us. And so it's like, we're looking at potentially a one additional RN nurse and three other LPN type nurses out there. And as far as the cost that I use the high end of the range out there, and then also the high end of health insurance. So we got a pretty conservative number out there. And now how the, what the actual number is, I'm relying on whoever's going to, like Carrie or Roberta or whoever out there that's going to look at this kind of thing. What I did do a little bit is I did go back and look at the number of hours as far as additional contracted health nurses and that kind of thing. And like the highest month that we had, we looked at an additional 2 FTEs approximately. So that's some kind of indicator out there of the type of nursing. But this is what we have in this budget right here is what Carrie was asking for. And then we have contract tracing. We have 150 hours per month at the $23.50. We averaged 122 hours per month from March to June. And so I bumped it up a little bit there to 150 just to be conservative. And then in March, we actually had 190 hours, depending on how this thing works out. So there's, I would think there's some give and take on that number there also. And then as far as the epidemiologist, we included one epidemiologist, and that person was budgeted also at the high end of the salary range as far as what was put in the advertisement, and then also the high end of health insurance. So it's conservative there. And then health educators, we had put in two of those into the budget there, and that was Scott's recommendation there. And so those also were budgeted at the high end of the range that was put out in the advertisement, and also high health insurance. So you can kind of see what that is. And then going down the list here, we included the Joint Information Center manager into the numbers there. We also have the medical director. We have PPE testing supplies. We also have office space rent. We have that approximately 4,500 square feet at almost $33 and $33 a square foot, and that's been included in there. I know there's still quite a bit of discussion, I think, going on or evaluation of what we might be looking at there on that, but at least it's a number that we have in here. And then we have what I call personnel non-FEMA, and what that is okay, it's anything like, say, anybody who like myself, you know, has been booking time to the COVID budget or anything like that. And this goes along with the CARES Relief Act money and that kind of thing. And you can see there's quite a bit of money there. This is, you know, there is some options with this, if you will, as far as like we can use it on those kind of expenditures, like, you know, whoever who has been budgeted but is working on COVID and that kind of stuff. And or not. But what this does is it does go against a budgeted position. So you can kind of see here, this would be like actually covering our revenue shortfall out here, the $653,000, if that comes out to be true. Or if we need to spend more money on any other kind of COVID type event, you know, we don't have to spend it on this thing, but it's available for us to, you know, like in the end, if we have to do something for the relief fund or what have you out there, this money is available out here. So, and then this is just other, you know, when I go down through here, these are some of the actual numbers as far as personnel overtime, what came through as far as operations, as far as accounts payable, and then what came through as a P card, which was actual numbers and that kind of thing. And we're looking at basically the fundamental idea as far as the flow of funds out here is to say that we're looking at specific grants. Guidance that was given to us by the FEMA, that we need to look at a specific grant out there. We did get guidance as far as like the relief fund that we could use FEMA first and the 25% match as far as the relief fund from DOLA. And then so it kind of goes like we got specific FEMA and then the Corona relief monies as far as our flow of funds going out there. And how this works out, I'm going to, you know, drop down just a little bigger picture. As we are break even with this, we're saying we're going to wash with everything out here, our revenues and expenses. We can't afford what's included in this expense budget out here. We are also using up 100% of our relief funds, the $1.2 million. And that's, you know, the kind of, if you will, the plug or the one that, you know, the thing that we have some flexibility on is, you know, whether or not we need to, you know, spend money on additional services as opposed to budgeted services that we're using on COVID is this, you know, non-FEMA line item out here. But I didn't, okay, some of the things, you know, so here's the various different revenues that we have out here. And we have the ELC grant with the contract tracers, and the ELC grant also covers the epidemiologist, and that's kind of a monthly receipt that we get in from CDPHE. And you can see where we're not really we're using up approximately 13,000, and it's a little over 14,000, so we have a little bit of flexibility that could go on to next year and that kind of thing. You know, another big picture thing is like we don't, you know, like going into 2021, you know, most of these sources of revenue that we have, and even, you know, even the relief fund, that all ends by the end of the year. So it'll be a different look when we look into 2021. But right here is how we're kind of using up the ELC funds. Then we started using more the two direct grants that we got for COVID out there, was a $55,000 grant and a $53,000 grant almost. And we used those against the those positions that we're looking at here, the director, the public health administrator, and then administrative position, and the nurse. And then,
hey Dan, can I interrupt for a minute?
Yeah, absolutely.
So under this section for revenues, mm-hmm. are these revenues all exclusive of our share of the CARES allocation?
These ones up top here are exclusive of the DOLA Corona Relief Fund. So these are specific. We're using those like dollar for dollar for those particular positions. We're following that guidance from FEMA that we're using the specific grant first, and so that's what we're doing right here.
Okay.
And then there was an executive order for immunizations, but that's 100% of that money went to Northwest Colorado Health. So I don't. There's not a lot of money there, so I'm not really thinking that we're probably going to get, even though it was to go to, it could be used for COVID. I'm not thinking that money is going to come probably into our realm here, and it's not that large, so I had not included that. And then we had the planning grant for $50,000, which I haven't included it as an expense or a revenue. I'm saying it's a wash right now until I know something further about what goes on with that, if there's an additional expense or what have you. More than the $50,000. And then we also have the infrastructure grant, $300,000 at 50% match. I haven't put that in yet since I didn't know whether or not we were going to do that. But if we did do that $150,000, we'd lower some of this idea up here. Well, yeah, we'd lower some of this up here as far as like, you know, how much we're getting as far as covering some budgeted expenditures and still be able to use that grant out there. So, and then this is basically the FEMA portion of what was up above up there, where we're saying we're going to get 75% funding for that going out into the future. And then here's the relief fund that covers basically the match off of FEMA, or in the case of like some of that non-FEMA personnel kind of costs and stuff like that is coming across 100% and that type of thing. So let's see. What I guess I can say is in overall look, we have, given this particular budget that we have right now, as far as like these new positions that we're potentially looking at, we've got, let's see. We're looking at approximately almost 7.9 FTEs if we go along with this idea. We have the funds to cover this cost through the end of the year at that level.
So this is a different worksheet than you sent to the
fact
packet. So make sure you send this to us so we can review it when we get done too, Dan. That'd be great.
Okay, yeah, because I could do that. Yeah, because this was that I changed it. This is different because we found out the date of the declaration moved from 27th to the October or July 27th to October 23rd, and that's why I updated this. And I think this right now is probably the most relevant. And I'll send it to you. So yeah,
Dan, I have a couple of questions and comments. So the first is that I believe that the ELC money is we can use for 30 months. Yeah. I don't think it ends in December. So isn't Correct. There some argument to be made for using the other money first and then saving that money for next year?
We did. We We only used basically the July through December.
Okay.
So it starts basically, we started it in July with the contract tracers.
Yeah.
And then here in August, we started the, a full boat of contract tracers and an epidemiologist.
Because we have like $400,000 of that money, right?
Yeah.
We are saving most of it for future years. That makes sense to me.
But to Beth's point, if we could find some way to save $67,000 in the above numbers, then we could move that $67,000 into 2021.
That's a possibility. I'm still following that FEMA guidance that we have a specific grant available for us. We could take that risk. This budget was presented with the idea that we would use a specific grant first and then use FEMA after that.
No. I think what Beth was referring to is the $400,000 of CDPHE money that's available over a 30-month period.
Yeah.
Couldn't these two gray line items, lines 32 and 33, we could theoretically zero those out.
I think Dan's saying we shouldn't use FEMA money for that first, because they want you to use, if you have some money that's for a specific purpose, but we could use CARES Act money for that first, Dan, right? If we're not, I mean, we don't have to decide right this minute, but it seems like if that's possible, then we would have more money available for us for the to get through however long, you know, this response is going to take.
That is an option. We could do the CARES relief, the DOLA CARES relief money. Yeah.
All right. And then a couple other just questions. I noted that you don't have any expenses projected for the rest of the year with regards to overtime or purchasing supplies. And I imagine we're going to keep buying test kits. All right. Contained in the Munis and P card section. Okay. Thank you for that. And then, but I imagine there'll be some overtime, but that line item's a pretty small amount. So never mind. Okay. That makes sense. Sorry, I missed that. Thank you very much.
You're okay.
And haven't we had expenses for the medical director in March through June?
Yeah, we did. I just didn't break all that stuff out up here. Just left it down in this area. Like this, the medical director is in operations under Munis here. And what I did I just tried to go back and look at an approximation of what the medical director was costing us per month. And that's how I came up with this idea here. So
that makes sense. Thank you.
Sure.
Those are the questions I have there. I do want to ask Mark to talk about the process for figuring out which of these positions are going to be hired. I mean, I appreciate knowing that, yes, we have the money to do whatever is needed here. But I think we just need to understand how we're going to decide who's going to be hired, because I wasn't even aware that there was a discussion happening about an assistant director or bringing on more nurses rather than using contract nurses, that sort of stuff. And Dan, I'm not asking you to speak for that, but just understand how those things are going to be decided. I imagine they're not decided yet.
No.
Or at least I hope not.
not that I'm aware. I mean, we just got the ad out. Only thing I know about is that we got four contract tracers out there.
Yep. I think we have seven now, but yes.
Okay.
So Beth, let me clarify. And that's where you see that public health director assistant. That was a conversation that we had many, many weeks ago about somebody that would come in. And you might, Beth, you might recall this conversation. I know it's been, things are washing together, but we were wondering whether we needed a business manager in that position that kind of be the traffic cop within that office to do some of the business operational functions before, and it was just in discussion before we took that any further. We decided that we were going to take the administrative assistant up to a full 40 hours because she had been part-time before, and then also reinforce her skill base a little bit as we're doing right now to see if we can again pick up those business operational elements. So that's kind of the reason that you see that in there now. Having said that, once again, as we've discussed collectively, if we talk to Roberta as she gets a little bit more acclimated, do we feel as if we need some of that bench strength within that arena? We'll come back and talk to you, you the commissioners, in a little bit more detail about that. So in terms of where we think the platform's going to be in the coming months, in terms of as we go forward, we will be able to give us everybody a little better window on that as Roberta maybe gets another couple weeks under her belt, and then we can talk just specifically about where the biggest need is and where we feel that we can prioritize those particular positions. So long-winded explanation, I apologize, Beth, but we still probably need a little bit more time to determine just exactly what the most important positions are going to be, and then we can give you a little bit more better understanding of where this is going to land.
I think that makes sense. It's helpful to look at this because we've been talking about, we're like, oh, we have money, but we don't really know how much of it has been spent yet and how much, so this is helpful just to understand what it could look like and knowing that there are still some decisions to be made. I have one other question, Dan, about the immunizations contract. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you know those contracts run July through June.
Correct.
And I know that Northwest Colorado Health did have that contract. My understanding was that immunizations contract was scheduled to be moved over to us. Are we aware of whether that happened or not?
I'm not aware that happened, but we'll find out.
Yeah, well, there's a lot. I actually have it on my list over here to talk with you, Mark, about contracts today, because I think we need to talk some more about that. But we definitely need to know if we have that contract. My understanding was that we were scheduled to take that on. I'm not sure of the timeline. Do you know if the executive, regardless, we would use it for probably things that are at least related to COVID, which is flu vaccines, hopefully at some point a COVID vaccine, some of those kinds of things, but we definitely need to find out the status of that contract specifically. I get the only question I had was whether that executive order carried over into the second half of this year, the new state fiscal year.
My recollection on that, it was just through the end of the last fiscal year.
That's what I was thinking too. Just wasn't sure if you knew. Okay, I have more questions about contracts, but those aren't for you necessarily.
Okay.
I have a summary question, Dan, just so that big picture I can understand this. So we have approximately $1.2 million of CARES allocation that we're supposed to spend before the end of 2020. And this $1.8 million or $1.759 million, that's basically the short story is that spends the $1.2 million of our CARES allocation, and the rest of that dollar amount is theoretically funded by a combination of FEMA reimbursement and a few of these specific CDPHE revenue streams.
Yeah, it's basically this area right here. These are your specific ones that you've got out here. This is this green color is FEMA, and this is this area right here is the DOLA CRF or the Corona Relief Fund.
Dan, can you clarify then? Are we actually in this budget? Are we actually spending all of that 1.2 million? Because if a lot of these expenses are covered 75% by FEMA, I don't know how we get close to spending all of that 1.2.
So
in yellow, does that add up to 1.2 million? You don't have a subtotal there like you do with the other sections.
He's about to show it to you.
Yeah.
There it is. That's the $1.2 million right there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Many numbers in my head.
It's all good. Neither can I. So what I was doing up here is, okay, I was showing it up here because this is how I can kind of kind of a goal seek. It's a what if kind of a calculation. So I can plug this number here to see what. So this was how it kind of like balances out in the end with this here non-FEMA stuff line item.
So where's the 25% of the FEMA money?
25% of the FEMA? That's yeah. Like here you can see like a lot of these things here is all these 25%.
That is the 20, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so you've done a great job of spending every last penny.
But Jim, remember that there's like five FTEs in here that we haven't approved yet.
I understand.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah,
7.9 new ones, right?
I have a thought, a crazy thought to throw out, and you know how much I love running what if crazy scenarios. One of the issues that I think we haven't discussed yet is that with the proposed lease space that we would like to lease right now. Subject to negotiation, I'm sure, the landlord is standing pretty firm on a three-year lease. Huh? I know that that would be problematic with single-year appropriations. The crazy idea I have to throw out here is, could we just go ahead, do a supplemental budget in 2020 for the full amount of a three-year lease and have all of that qualify for CARES allocation dollars?
There's been some pretty strong verbiage in there that it has to be, it's an accrual basis kind of thing. So if it was going out into future years, you're basically what you're saying is you're prepaying. I don't believe right now, from my understanding, what I'm looking at there is that would be an allowable cost. It would be allowable for whatever we spent through December 30th, but anything past that would not be an allowable cost.
And by the way, on that particular line item, Dan, that you've identified for the office space, I believe that we're focused right now on something that's more like 2,300 or 2,400 square feet.
Oh, okay. Because I was taking that whole space. Which one is that?
I don't think
this,
that the
this upper hilltop. Level, we're looking at this one right. Can you see this?
Yeah.
Hilltop, yeah. Entire building.
I just don't believe that's the direction we're headed, at least in the short term. It's really more the lower level, which is roughly half. There's some moving targets there.
Okay.
Exactly what that square footage would look like, but I believe it's going to be between 2,200, 2,600 square feet.
But Tim, don't you think for this conversation, I mean, it's sort of irrelevant. I mean, Dan is really just demonstrating to us that we have the funding available for these things. I think when we get to like September, October, if we still have outstanding funds that we don't believe we're going to spend, then there's more conversation to be had. But
I agree. It's a marginal dollar number.
Well, and right now all of this is sort of estimates and projections. You know, it's none of it's exact yet.
Correct. I agree.
Get our crystal ball out here so we'll all figure out. We still have a need out there for human services as well, so you know. And
yeah, that's a good point. I know we got that information from CCI that some of this can be used for human services too, right? So just something to think about. And then the other piece, I have no idea when we would make a decision about this kind of thing, but there are still conversations about where there might be funding available to support some business relief kinds of things. I know, is one of you in the bankers group? Doug, you are, right? I don't know if you were at their last meeting or not. John is looking at John Bristol and Kara are looking at a low interest loan fund as kind of a last resort for, you know, businesses if needed. And they're trying to identify where there might be seed funding for that available. I've not obviously not made any promises about anything, but as we're moving forward, I think it's just something else to keep on the list in terms of just if there's an opportunity to support businesses with some of this funding, I know that that's allowable, and we might want to just consider how we could do that.
There'd have to be a lot of groundwork laid, because just like you pointed out, we're probably not really going to know where we're at with this overall scheme until September. So somehow getting all that money out the door in October, November, or December, let's just say we identified a couple $300,000 here that we didn't really need to spend, we'd have to scramble to get that money out the door.
Right. So, well, I will say on this loan fund, John, that's exactly what John is doing. I mean, I think he recognizes that, you know, local government may or may not be able to support that, but he's definitely laying the groundwork for it. And there's an organization in Colorado that is managing these types of funds across the state. I can send you guys some information. He was starting the conversation with the bankers, because we need them to be on board if it's going to go anywhere. But just for consideration, and you're absolutely right, Tim. I mean, we have to kind of figure out, we would never want to be in a situation where this money didn't get spent locally, in my opinion. And so I think we just need to be thinking about, what do we do if we get to September, October, and we don't have projected expenses that are going to use all of this funding?
And you know, the other consideration there, and I don't have a firmly held opinion about, let's just say we had $200,000 or $300,000 left over, exactly how that money ought to be spent. And certainly a business loan program makes sense, but I think, you know, we all also need to consider other needs in the community. And I'm thinking specifically of some of our nonprofits that I think we know are struggling in ways that are just as difficult as some of the businesses. So
are you talking about a loan program, or are you talking about a loan forgiveness and a grant?
It actually is a loan program. I mean, you could do either, honestly.
Pay back to us?
Yeah, Doug makes a good point. It's almost like you'd have to give that money away if you want to say that you actually spent it.
Yes.
Well, I'll send you, I don't know the details, but I'll send you what John shared with me about what they're looking at. I mean, that's all it is. It's what John is looking at, thinking about, and there are other communities doing it. You know, there are some places that are doing loan funds. There are some places that are doing grants. And Tim, your point, to your point, I think the nonprofits would be eligible for that same pot of funding. I mean, it's not specific to a type of corporate structure. It's, you know, they're still small businesses. But anyway, just something to consider. And I could think of some other things, you know, that would benefit our community that we might just think about. I mean, to your point, Tim, maybe it's, you know, a supplemental, you know, a round of HRC funding, or I mean, maybe there's childcare assistance money that would be of value to people as they try to go back to work. Or, I mean, there are definitely things I think that could be considered without forming new programs. I mean, funneling through programs that already exist, but to provide additional relief. If we don't find that we actually are going to be able to spend all this money by the end of the year.
You know, one of the things, again, a really small item, but and maybe this is a question. Did we make arrangements to purchase a refrigerator for the vaccine store?
CDPHE will pay for it, is my understanding. Oh, okay. I'm not sure that arrangements have been made, but I understand that CDPHE will pay for it once we identify an location for it.
And then, Beth, another thing to put on your radar screen for your discussion with Mark regarding CDPHE contracts is, I've had a couple of odd text messages from Don Cook regarding the tobacco grant, and that his understanding is that it is a grant that is given jointly to Rout County and Moffat County, and that for some reason it cannot be split up. And I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I had a phone call yesterday with Jill's chief of staff, who's supposed to be helping me with this contract stuff. And I'm supposed to talk with her again. I was actually talking to her about something else, but I'm supposed to talk to her again on Monday. So if we have questions related to contracts, I can compile those for when I chat with her on Monday.
That'd be good. And, you know, I guess I can get back with Don, but I kind of feel like this is something that should be handled by staff. And I do know that Roberta is actually planning on having a conversation with Carrie today, I believe. And so.
Yeah, definitely. And I do, I mean, like I said, contracts were on my list of things to talk about today. And I wanted to just ask Mark, I mean, I want to just share what I know with Roberta and kind of give her some responsibility for this. I don't think it makes sense for me to keep being in the middle of it unless it's helpful. And I agree with you, Tim. I mean, it's staff. The reason I was involved before is because we couldn't get anything done until we had a commissioner in the room demanding that something get done. So, so I just need to find out what the right timeline is.
Frankly, I don't have any problem, Beth, with you being involved. I have a problem with me being involved.
Yeah, tell Don to call me. I don't know why he's calling you to talk about those things, because he and I have been the ones working on the contract stuff.
Okay, great. You know, yeah. I will do exactly that. That's a great idea.
That sounds good.
So, you know, the other comment I have is, I have to admit that I was skeptical that we would find an easy way to spend $1.2 million of CARES allocation. And now that I see this and how quickly and easily that money got spent, I'm feeling some remorse about how we did the allocation with the municipalities. But I guess that's water under the bridge at this point in time.
I disagree with you, though, because first of all, there are still, like I said, like at least five FTEs here that we have not approved yet, which is a significant amount of money. There's still $650,000, which is money that is already budgeted, which, you know, I've pointed out before, is we just have to think about that money a little differently, in my opinion. And yeah, we did follow a similar allocation formula to what everybody else is doing with their municipality.
I know, but I'm just struggling to understand how each of the municipalities will actually be able to spend their share when I look at how much we're doing as public health. But that's fine. It's just a comment. We're all moving.
The city steamboat's supposed to be helping us and providing some public health educators. So, you know, they should be able to charge that against their CARES money too.
Absolutely. So,
and that's why, you know, hopefully they will keep that in mind as they're doing moving forward on it. So
I guess, so.
Yeah, my broader comment. So I'm all good, you know, and again, Dan, I appreciate the spreadsheet and the look of it. And again, it says that anything kind of out here is possible and fundable, and that we aren't going to be hook on the hook for it. So, again, I guess at the same point in time, these people and the FTEs and the rest, and Beth alluded to it a little bit as well. So, Mark, I just hope that we just have a plan out of all that. And so, you know, and we don't need to spend money just for the sake of spending money, as I think Beth and Tim both say too. So, you know, whatever we don't spend, it has to be put out, and maybe we can do some other community things with it. But again, I guess the relief is that we have a lot of money to really head off this whole COVID thing and try to get in front of it and try to be with it. So
assuming that we cure the problem by December 31st.
No, I understand that too.
and then a number of these proposed FTEs necessarily would have to go away on December 31st.
Well, that's the idea to hiring them too. They need to know that this is a temporary position, that, you know, the funding and the program ends on 12/31.
Well, I do have a question. I mean, Dan, in your understanding of that ELC funding, which positions can it be used to support? Is it only the contact tracers and the epidemiologists, or next year can that funding be used to support some of these other positions?
From what I understood, it was just the contract tracers and epidemiologists, because it was like even in the grant name itself, it had epidemiologists in there and that kind of thing, and laboratory capacity. So that's all I mean, we can ask more questions, but that's what was my understanding, is that it was specific for that kind of thing.
Okay, thank you. I do remember Jill saying something that could be, that money could be used for health educators, but I agree with you that in the information I've seen, it didn't seem to support that concept. But I would say, I mean, I think, well, I don't know. It seems like there's an argument to be made that nurses are supporting, you know, testing capacity. And I would think maybe within that grant, something like that might also be allowed, but we'd have to look back at it more.
Yeah. I mean, we are using it up quite a bit. I mean, you know, on a monthly basis, we're using like $13,000 of the $14,000 per month. So,
yep.
If that, you know, that holds true.
So that on your spreadsheet, Dan, the column B, that 10.4 is the if we hired all these positions, that would be the full public health department FTE load?
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, we got those two health educators in there. I don't know if you consider those to be public health or environmental health.
Well, I'm just thinking in terms of space as we.
Oh yeah, yeah.
As we move forward, try to consider what's an appropriate lease space for public health. It seems like that might be the number of people okay. would need to be housed.
Well, you might need a little few more because those contact tracers. You know, that 0.4 is 150 hours per month, but I don't exactly know how many people that is. You know, when it actually comes to how many people are showing up to do contact tracing?
Yeah, we understand, and we've had those conversations about what kind of space and how often would the contact tracers need it. I'm more focused on this 10.4 is pretty close to the number of offices that we would need to provide for public health. And then that question would be, is that need simply for 2020, or does that FTE load continue on into 2021? And I don't think any of us can actually answer that question right now.
Well, how can it go into 2021 when we don't have money for it?
Well, you know, a certain amount of it could go into 2021 with, you call that the ELC money?
Yeah. That, you know, that'd be like the epidemiologist and the contract tracers. That's how this budget's presented. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's tough for Roberta right now, obviously having just gotten started to be able, I think it's easy enough to project what our immediate needs are for office space through the end of 2020. It becomes a little bit more problematic when we start thinking about 2021 and beyond. And it kind of raises the question to me, should we necessarily be seeking office space to accommodate this 9, 10, 11 people? But when we know that number may drop off significantly in 2021, and we don't want to be stuck with office space that we don't really have a use for, especially if we're getting involved in a three-year lease.
I'll just reiterate that it feels premature when, I mean, currently what we have is the director, the admin assistant, the contact tracers, and the epidemiologist, and then we have contract nurses, and I think there's a question about, does each of them really need their own office? You know, we haven't decided on the health educators yet. I think there's a lot of moving parts, and it's pretty clear that Roberta is going to need to make a recommendation to us about short-term and long-term staffing needs of the department, and that's what's going to answer your question, right?
Yeah, but you know, the other part of the, there's two other parts to this equation. Number one is my perception is that the need for additional office space is pretty urgent and pretty immediate. And even if we decided to pull the trigger today on renting a new office space, we could be a minimum of 30, potentially 60 days away from actually being able to move in, which puts us out into potentially in October before we're really ready to occupy space. That might be a little bit pessimistic. And we're limited by what's actually available and what met the criteria that Julie put together for eligible office space. But your first statement, Beth, that conversations about exactly what we're going to do with office space may be a little bit premature at this point in time until Roberta's really truly identified short and longer term needs.
I guess I feel like you're in the weeds on this a little bit, Tim. I have to admit, I think, you know, I feel like this is a sort of a staff job to try to figure this out for us.
I think he's negotiating in his mind the 30 month lease and the obligation of that. So I respect that.
I understand. Yeah. So,
you know, and again, I don't know that, you know, hell, we could just say no to the damn thing and he doesn't have anybody. So, you know, maybe we need to be a little, you know, maybe we send staff up there, you know, and it's one thing for us to a year and a half lease or something, but, you know, obligating ourselves to 3 years right now, unless we think that we're going to be able to fund the human services and we could potentially move the human services out there in the interim and go into the construction thing. So that's the gamble out there. Well.
I guess my thought is, I mean, just generally, I don't think we should sign a 3-year lease unless we think we're going to need this space for 3 years. I don't think we should say we're going to sign it because the landlord won't let us sign a shorter lease. That doesn't seem responsible.
And Beth, I will credit your statement that I may be a little bit in the weeds. But the reason that I'm bringing this up now, and maybe this isn't the correct forum to have this conversation, is that this is moving along at a pretty rapid clip with staff. And I think that there is this sense of urgency that we need to do something sooner rather than later. But I hate to be the one to suggest tapping the pause button on something that's clearly a need, but I'm frankly worried, especially after our previous effort at securing space didn't end all that well for us. So, and I've already, we had a meeting yesterday, and I've talked to Mark. I'm going to talk with him after our meeting today about some thoughts I have about this, I guess we need more staff input and maybe a little bit more time on this whole subject to make a good decision. Well, that's being met with a resounding sound round of approval.
Yeah, okay, maybe.
I don't really care that much. And obviously you have strong opinions. I think you should share those with Mark. I don't know that we need to publicly debate the terms of this lease. I think you guys are the ones who are working on this. Nobody has put anything in front of me. So I'm happy to just wait until we have some actual recommendations before I start getting worried about it.
I think Beth kind of hit it on the head, though. I don't think none of us are interested in having a 3-year lease on it. So,
yeah.
on an immediate, you know, program. I mean, you know, hell, for that matter, you know, we could send all these people down there to the exhibit hall in Hayden and figure out something, you know. So I don't know. So, you know, it's a temporary problem, we hope. And we can't solve it with a 3-year lease. That's
okay. Well, let's move on from that. Dan, anything else you feel important to share with us? And by the way, thank you for this. This was exactly what I was hoping to see in terms of projecting out through the end of the year. So I appreciate the work you've done on this.
Thank you. No, I don't have anything else to bring up now.
You guys have any more questions? And you're going to send this?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll send this 1023 one to you guys.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
I just have a broader question for us. It's interesting. If we're in this need for having all these public health people, then everybody else is in the same need. Where the heck are all these people going to come from? Yep. Good.
Well, I know we had good, Roberta said we had a good list of applicants for epidemiologists. She sounded more concerned about our ability to find a public health nurse when she talked yesterday. But I agree with you. It's hard to believe that they're just sitting around. Although I will say that it seems like Roberta said this, and I feel like I've heard it in some other places too. There are people who have background in public health who sort of have been working in other places, either in the private sector or in a different field, who sort of feel guilty that they're not working in public health during this time and are interested in finding places where they can be directly involved in response. So it's always amazing to me what we have here. Like there's a lot of brain power in this community. And I don't know. I just remember seeing one of the epidemiologist applications, and it's someone who lives here and is working in kind of a service type job right now, but has a PhD in epidemiology, I think, if I remember correctly, but it's like driving shuttle vans or something, you know, so there's a lot of that around, I think, in this community.
What a great year to be a recent graduate from the School of Public Health at CU. Everybody sends their kids to college hoping they become doctors and lawyers. They should have sent them to public health.
Maybe.
All right. Any more questions for Dan?
I don't have any. Thanks, Dan.
Okay, you guys have a good day. Thank you.
All right. We're running a little ahead of schedule. We have the sheriff joining us at 10:30, correct? So I don't see Sheriff Wiggins here yet, so I guess we have a few minutes to kill.
We have everyone else who's part of that discussion, but obviously we should probably wait for the sheriff too.
I think so. Morning, Jason.
Good morning, guys. Hope you're all doing well.
Look at that office. There's so much light.
Nice high ceilings.
And space. We fit three people in there from IT.
Not during COVID, though, Robert. That would not be prudent.
I've even got the shades down. There's so much light in here. I've actually got it fairly dark compared to what it's like with the shades up.
How's call volume?
Actually, our call volume is up for this July compared to last July a little bit, which to be expected considering all the people that are in town, all the traffic. It took me 20 minutes yesterday afternoon when I left work just to get through Steamboat Springs to the other end of town. So it's busy.
Yeah.
I would say for the most part for us in the comm center and taking the calls and so forth, things are kind of back to normal. Once you leave the building, it's not back to normal, but the type of calls we're getting, that sort of thing, it seems to be pretty much back to normal.
That's good to hear.
Good morning, everybody. This is Sheriff Wiggins. I'm on now.
Great. Good morning, Sheriff. Thanks for joining us. I think everybody's here that needs to be here for this discussion, which we're going to be talking about FirstNet. So I'll turn it over to you, Sheriff.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Tim. First of all, I want to thank you everyone for taking time out of their schedule in such short notice. Just let me get started by giving a quick recap of what this FirstNet proposal is. In case there's anybody on the line that's unfamiliar with FirstNet, FirstNet has been in development for several years and was designed, and just in a few minutes I'll ask Corey and Robert to chime in if I say anything inaccurate, but FirstNet was designed to give first responders a designated data and cellular service that is not affected when civilian cell phone use overloads towers, causing some failures. When cellular service goes down for us, so does a large portion of our ability to communicate and do our jobs. Our mobile data computers, which we refer to sometimes as MDCs, in our patrol vehicles also go down, and we lose our RMS, or our report management system, that allows us to document and report throughout the county. We lose our ability to communicate by way of cell phones, which happens a lot more than you may think. We also lose our ability to monitor our people through our GPS system. When I say our people, I'm talking about our patrol vehicles that have GPS systems within them, or at least they did at one point. We may not have those systems still readily available. But so, you know, if cellular goes down, we are totally relying on our radios, our VHF, and our 800s. Through FirstNet, first responders have a designated provider unaffected by civilian users. So when natural disasters or other significant incidents like COVID occur, and everyone gets on their cell phone devices clogging down cell towers, first responders keep going as long as we're part of FirstNet. For us, that's a pretty big deal. The COVID-19 situation made most of us realize that we, and when I say we, I'm talking about government, are or can negatively be affected when critical communication systems fail. We also realize that when we are dealing with huge events, that there are other departments and individuals as critical to operations as our first responders. When we opened the EOC, we had people from many different county departments assisting in the management of the COVID situation. My point is that we can add other essential departments into our group that we feel are necessary. For example, our county IT department, public health department, the county manager, the commissioners, and road and bridge, just to name a few, were later deemed essential for Rout County in order to manage this COVID situation. I think it's important to know that when bad things happen, we, as long as we're part of FirstNet, would have a secured communication system unaffected by the civilian overload. There has been some in-house testing in the last couple of months comparing our current provider, Verizon, to FirstNet, and we have confirmed that our current service compared to FirstNet is very comparable. In other words, there are some dead areas with both services, although they are in different areas of the county. At this time, neither company has what we can see a much greater service than the other. However, in our discussions with FirstNet, they have indicated that they are currently establishing plans or have plans underway that will help mitigate some of these what we call dead areas in the county. Now, FirstNet has a program that will soon expire. I think it was scheduled to expire by tomorrow, but Rory, I think, was able to get us an extension until the end of August. Okay, so the offer that's on the table, and I'm going to do my best to be as clear as I can, but I'm sure Rory will have to pipe in here in just a little bit to clarify some things and answer some questions. But to convert our current system over to FirstNet, we will need to upgrade our mobile devices. When I say that, I'm talking about cell phones, our cradle points. Cradle points are our modems that are in all of our patrol vehicles. And anyone who has an iPad in lieu of a mobile data computer. This cost is about $21,000 for Rout County Sheriff's Office, the communications / emergency management, and the coroner to purchase this new equipment. But here's the benefit. So under this current proposal, FirstNet is providing credits and mobile device buybacks or trade-ins through the end of the year, which will result in paying for all of this equipment. In fact, when considering all of the what FirstNet is offering, we should actually come out ahead $1,600 more than our expected cost. So basically they're paying for our equipment upgrades and giving us a little bit of money to boot. Something to consider, we are scheduled to replace all of the aforementioned equipment in 2021, so that's 5 months from now. This offer is an opportunity for Rouse County to save those scheduled equipment replacement expenses, and considering next year's budget concerns over COVID, I think this is a feather in our cap and an opportunity for us that we should probably take advantage of. Not only are we getting what many of us feel is a better service, but the cost-benefit analysis is a positive, and cost savings, and I think that's something that our taxpayers probably appreciate. So that's a quick, real quick overview and my limited knowledge of what First Net has to offer. So I guess what I should probably ask first is to ask Rory or Robert Diaz if I stated everything correctly, and if I've not, please correct any misstatements that I have made, and then you can provide additional clarification, and then I think we can open it up to other comments or questions. So, Rory, are you on the phone? How about Robert?
It looks like Rory is connected by video, but not by audio.
Yeah, are you guys able to hear me as well?
Yes, Robert, we can hear you. Go ahead.
All right. I think, like I said, Rory should be joining on. I don't know if his audio just wasn't working or having the issues, but Sheriff, I think you hit it all on the head. We proposed a lot of the expansion to cover a lot of these gaps that are going to be happening in Rouse County. But the biggest, I think, benefit with FirstNet is not just the expansion. It's, you know, some of the deployable assets that help with first responders, such as, you know, deployables during planned events or unexpected events, the ability to have that preemption, you know, during peak season. So, you know, FirstNet does bring some additional benefits. But all in all, I think you hit it on the head as well with the net cost benefits with your in-vehicle cradle points. You guys are looking to upgrade these within the next 12 months. FirstNet and AT&T, with all the benefits that FirstNet bring, is also giving you the ability to absorb a lot of that cost. So the $20,000+ you have to spend on the new hardware, eventually we are able to absorb a lot of that cost for those in-vehicle routers that allows you guys to perform all the duties. So I think Rory has the cost analysis here on what the hardware actually costs. So the devices themselves, so your handsets that the officers or the deputies carry around, the cost on those is on your top right-hand corner. That would outfit all of the deputies with the 99-cent latest, whether it's an option of an iPhone, a Samsung S10e, or a more ruggedized Kyocera DuraForce for a cost of about $36. Also outfits them with the MiFi devices, which is the following line. Those are the hockey puck style devices that give basically a mobile hotspot to all of the deputies, depending on the deputies that actually need it. But the most important part is the third line, and this is where the cost is a lot more expensive, is the in-vehicle routers. Generally, these cost upwards of about, you know, $1,000 each. And normally you don't, as far as a device, you always see it, hey, those devices are pretty inexpensive. But these routers are generally not subsidized as much. So the cost for a county, you'd be looking, again, $21,222, which is already the subsidized cost for FirstNet, which gives you a grand total of, you know, like I said, $21,261 total upfront cost for the county. Now, we were able to subsidize or give you some credits that would go throughout the basically bill cycle that would go on the bill. So the first subsidized credit you're going to be seeing is for each smartphone, right? Each smartphone that you're going to be bringing over from the county, we're giving you a $300 credit, which goes towards that $21,000 cost. The first cost is, or the first credit totals out to $12,950. The cost for the non-stock devices, which is the cradle points that we're going to be giving you, another credit of $375. So that's $10,125. And then the data line activations, which is an additional $75. And that's for the six data lines, which include MiFi and some tablets, which total $450. And then the fifth line, or the fourth line that's on there, is your trade-in credit for your old devices that we'll be taking those on. And we did a cost analysis based on what you currently have. So we'll be giving your credit on those of $2,290, which is an immediate credit that goes towards the account. And then the last line you see on there is, as we transition this, we know that the transition is not an immediate transition. So we're offering also 1 month of free service, which allows the sheriff's office to actually go through the transition at no rush time. So we were able to absorb 1 month of service. So if you look at when we put all of these credits and everything that's gonna be in there, the total credits come out to about $28,509, which gives the county a net credit of $7,247.43 by end of year. I think the only reason why we wanted to get, of course, approval and make sure that you guys were okay with that is the equipment cost will be an upfront cost, and then these credits will come within about 3 to 4 months of activating the actual devices. So by end of year, you guys will end up netting the $7,247, but the cost will be an initial cost of $21,261. So hopefully I tackled a lot of that, Rory. I'll kind of mute. I don't know if you were able to jump on, but you were manning the screen a little bit, or the sheriff was. But I'll mute it. Did I miss anything or any questions from Sheriff Wiggins? Okay. I don't know if Rory was able to jump on or still having audio issues, but I'll pause there. Any questions I can answer?
Sure. Robert, this is Commissioner Tim Corrigan. This is subsidized. Is FirstNet subsidized with $0? Because the obvious question is, how can AT&T afford to do this?
Well, the benefit to this is you got to understand that FirstNet and AT&T are one company, but also separate, right? FirstNet is a new first responder network that allows first responders to get all the benefits that come with being a first responder as well. But the reason you're getting all of this is because FirstNet is trying to make the transition from a lot of the agencies as easy as possible, right? Because they figured out that, you know, if we make this cost a lot more expensive and a lot more difficult for counties to switch over, that the transition basically will never happen. A, because of budgets, right? We know that counties run on specific budgets. But FirstNet is also trying to be very aggressive, just with the concerns of all the COVID budget cuts, right? We understand that COVID has put a lot of counties in a net negative, right, with budgets. So none of the counties are going to be able to be doing any of the transition. So we're trying to solve a lot of problems when it comes to county budgets, but also be very aggressive to meet a specific number that we have to meet with the FirstNet Commission. So FirstNet has a number that we have to get a certain amount of subscribers in order for us to keep this program running. So AT&T's essentially being pretty aggressive with that. So all in all, I guess we're doing this to try to solve the problem for the county when it comes to cost, but also be very aggressive to meet our numbers to the FirstNet Commission. As you know, the FirstNet Board is a federally funded program, and there's certain regulations and certain things that we have to meet with the board in order for us to meet those numbers. So hopefully that answers your question.
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
I guess there's, and the benefit to all of this is there's no hidden cost to it. Everything's pretty upfront. The nice thing with this is you guys are running off of what we call our NASPO contract. So every carrier that's out there has a contract that has been negotiated with the state. So there is no hidden agendas with that. So if at any point the county decided 6 months or a year down the road that, hey, this isn't working for us, there is no early termination for any of these devices. So if you know, you said, hey, January, we're not satisfied with it, you guys keep the equipment. We basically wouldn't charge you any sort of early termination fee. So the reason for this, all of this is all regulated by the state contract. So any carrier or any other AT&T that you're going to see out there has negotiated these pricing already through the state. So the same promotion or same deal that we're going to offer Route County is very similar to what we offer City of Steamboat, City of Colorado Springs, City of Denver. So it's not like you're getting really anything unique, but the only thing you're getting out of this is the promotions.
Keep going, Robert. I think that was the sheriff's radio going on in the background.
These are the promotions that we were able to get you that essentially expired for the month of June. But we've been working with Sheriff Wiggins to try to get him the best price possible. And we know that it does take time. We work with government accounts on a regular. So it's not something that the sheriff was able to move on a dime. So he knows he needs to get approval from the county. So we were able to get some extensions and try to get this as best price as possible. But yeah, you're running off of a state negotiated contract, not something that's just unique to, of course, Route County.
So I heard you say that we would have an early opt-out if possibility if we so chose. What kind of assurances do we have about the ongoing monthly access charges?
The monthly access charges are, again, those are also part of the contract. And once you sign up, those are non-negotiable. And then the nice thing is FirstNet, the $39.99 or the monthly cost you're going to see on the left-hand side, that's a cost at a nationwide level. So these prices have been negotiated at a national level, not just for the state. So the $39.99, the unlimited for the smartphones, the $36.80 for the data devices, and then the $36.80 for the connection or the data that goes through each of the cradle points and the data that goes through there. That's never going to change.
Never?
Never.
Hey, Robert, folks, can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear
you. Oh, love of God. My apologies for the technical difficulties. I just to interject really quickly. So NASPO contracts are renewed. You function off them currently with Verizon. They come to terms every 4 or 5 years. Currently, NASPO 4 is being adopted by the state of Colorado to go in effect in December of this year. And the rate plan structures for the next 5 years of that NASPO agreement have been confirmed. So these price points are negotiated in advance at the state level, and we're not capable of unless we actually go through and get an assigned amended agreement to a contract to adjust those rate plan structures. So when we say with confidence that your smartphone plan is $39.99 with unlimited talk, text, and data, or $44.99 if you wanted a hotspot function, or $36.80 for data only with hotspot features, those prices are not subject to change. So we're not capable of doing anything unless you agree to an amended contract.
So the short story, we would have a 5-year guarantee on that rate structure.
Yeah, it's no different than what you currently function off of Verizon. So they're transitioning to a NASPO 4 agreement as well from the state, and their rate plan structures are set. Now, the only one exception to that is we could discount them further than what the rate plan structures have stated. So for example, if something happens where the state negotiates a structured discount, a percentage off, that would be offered to reduce overhead cost of services, but not to increase without a signed agreement. So we can always offer discounts, but we can't increase without the state opting into it. Regarding your question about terms of services, right? So costs that could be yielded by the county, for regarding discontinuing services. So FirstNet, no different than any other government structured plan under the NASPO agreement, asks that you fulfill 2 years of service, right? So that's looking for a 24-month commitment of services. However, part of the language of the contract specifically states that we do not have termination dues, as Robert mentioned earlier. So for example, if you have to reduce services based upon the significant budgetary challenges that most public entities are facing right now, whatever that means, when it's one, three, any months underneath the 24-month requested service commitment, a request needs to just be done through the account team, myself or Robert, to discontinue those services. And we have to honor that request, and you are not liable for cost of hardware that has been substantially subsidized. You are not requested to pay any termination fees off of that discontinued services. You are only liable for the services you've rendered. So if you're halfway through a bill cycle of that specific service line, let's say it's a phone number, you would owe us back half of the service that you had rendered, but you would not be liable for the remainder of the month because we have to honor and discontinue the services at your request. The only caveat is that that needs to directly come through to the account agent, the account team, prior to the 2 year terms. If you are post 2 year terms of any lines of service, you can self-service and discontinue service throughout the portal. So you can click a button and hit cancel. You just have to do a formal request. As example, within your county, Steamboat Springs has had to do this recently. They had a handful of different changes within their staff, and they had to reduce a few lines of services they had obtained in February. There was a loss of life. There were some retirements and things that they had to discontinue services, and we did so, I think, within under a month of them even ascertaining that hardware and those services. They did that recently with about 11 different lines of service for their IT staff that they were going to prepare a handout on as means to adjust to the COVID pandemic. However, they determined that they didn't actually need those services after about a month's time. We canceled those. They have that hardware on hand for future use, but they were only liable for the services rendered for the course of the 30 days that they had it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think for the most part. Commissioners, any questions for Rory or Robert? Or if not, maybe we would ask for some input from Jason and Mo.
I think input from Jason and Mo would be good. So I think that was part of our discussion too.
This is Jason. I'm ready whenever you guys are.
Well, I don't know. I don't really have a specific question, but when we talked about this the other day, Tim and Doug, you both had a little bit of background on FirstNet that I didn't have. And you said they had been kind of, pitching this service for years, and I guess I would maybe articulate the question as, you know, why is now the right time to go forward with this? I don't know if you all would add to that based on your past conversations and sort of sales presentations that you've had from FirstNet.
So I guess I could address that for you, Beth. I'm not sure that we ever were given sales presentations in the past so much as presentations about the broad concept and what it would look like in the future. And as I said before, I think there was quite a bit of skepticism among a number of commissioners about what appeared to be a grand pie in the sky plan that we were just unsure of. This is the first time I think we've actually seen any kind of real numbers for Rout County.
Okay. Yeah,
I would concur with that too. And again, this has been in the works for probably, you know, I think probably 8 years or something like that. And, you know, yeah, it sounded great when we'd go to commissioner conference. And so, oh yeah, we'll believe it when we see it. So I guess we're seeing it. So I think it, you know, I definitely understand the concept of, priority airwaves and the rest. And that sounds like a great idea. And, you know, and that's what was the whole concept of it. And so, you know, I'm definitely supportive of this, and the devil was in the details and to figure out and to see whether it would win and what would really happen out here. So it's all good, sounds like. So,
and I guess I would add to what Doug just said, I'm sure that Jason and the sheriff will be able to answer this question. I think there was a bit of concern among commissioners that we would somehow be buying into this new technology that had not really been tested. And the question would be, is this going to replace our existing communications and microwave system? And I don't think anybody was excited about going in that direction until the technology was proven. So having said that, I'd turn it back over to Jason for his comments.
Yeah, I have a couple of things. So that was one of the things I wanted to bring up. I think even my first year here, there was some discussion with the commissioners, and there, I'll just say it seemed to me like there was some misinformation, not just here in the county, but kind of nationwide. And there was an assumption that FirstNet might replace our public safety radio system. And in my mind, that never was the intent. This is supplemental. This is not a replacement of our public safety radio system. It's basically a supplemental system. Just another couple of small things. We've been talking about this for a considerable amount of time, multiple months. I don't remember when my first contact with Rory was specifically about, you know, looking at FirstNet services and that sort of thing. I believe it was at the end of last year. So we've had a number of internal discussions. Mo and I, we've talked with Robert, Matt Hayden, back and forth about how things would go, you know, proposals, what it looks like, that sort of thing. From a network standpoint, we've done some internal testing, as the sheriff said. Chris Williams took a couple of devices that were provided as testing devices by FirstNet, went out and did real testing, comparing Verizon, our existing service, to what we get on FirstNet. And our assessment is, right as of today, is pretty equal. There's no clear advantage as far as actual coverage. But the other functions and the other things that we get through the first responder network or FirstNet are far and above better than what we potentially get with Verizon, because those things are provided at basically no charge to us upon our request. So we're pretty happy about that. And then also early on in COVID, the first couple of weeks that we were working from home or working remotely, there were a lot of us that had significant problems with our Verizon service just being able to get in and participate in virtual meetings. It was a point of frustration significantly for me. I know for Mo, a couple of the fire chiefs that are on Verizon, just, you know, fast busies, not being able to even access the network. And if we had this with the priority and preemption service with FirstNet, we would almost certainly not have experienced those problems, because we would have priority service over the commercial customers or the public, basically. So I totally support this. And I have seen some of the plans for FirstNet and AT&T as far as their expansion here in our county, even down to the level of what tower they're talking about putting service on to make sure that we have coverage. One of the cool things that AT&T and FirstNet is doing is they're engaging with Union Wireless for some of the very remote areas and improving some of their tower sites and co-locating at some of those sites here in Colorado and Wyoming. So that's a really good thing, and because it's expensive to build tower sites, as you guys know from the one that we just built last year at Emerald Mountain. So all of those things I think are very positive. We support this. And then the final thing that I want to say, I'm happy to answer any questions. One of the points of contention, if you will, with IT, Robert was concerned about the amount of staff time that it would require for us to basically have an additional account to manage and management of those devices. So we, communications, I've talked with our staff, Chris and Carrie, we have committed to basically being the contact point for the public safety components of this system. So Carrie Littman would be basically our account manager, would do the AP and AR with that and manage the devices. And then Chris and I would basically help her do that. So we feel like we can manage that. That's the idea here. In the future going forward, the AT&T team has said that we'd be able to subdivide our account if we wanted to do that later down the road and transition the rest of the county over to AT&T FirstNet if we decided to go that route. And then Robert's department could potentially continue managing the rest of the non-public safety devices like they are now. So we're committed to it. We're pleased with what we see. I think this is a great opportunity for us to save some money, really, and have a better service in the end. That's kind of a summary of all I have.
Questions for Jason?
Yeah, so I have a question for us, or Sheriff and Jason, or I guess so. So who gets this, and who gets to be on that network, and how do we determine why and what and the rest? And we dropping all the, you know, and I don't know, I'm not sure. We don't get to see all the, I mean, we have the personal cell phones and the rest, but I'm just asking a question. I mean, we have the ones that the county-owned cell phones as well, which the sheriff is a big player in that. But anyhow, my question, thanks.
So I want to ask Rory to talk about that, about who can be on what device, that sort of thing. Essentially, the entire county could go over to AT&T FirstNet if we chose to do that. But we're talking about right now, initially, basically the public safety first responders is what we're talking about right at this moment. So Rory, if you're still there, do you mind providing a little bit about how that works?
So as you mentioned, right, the easiest and logical aspect is the first responders, as it originally intended and built. As they evolved, the concept of how FirstNet would function, in no different our conversations with you, Jason, you pointed out, there are interdependencies within every local government and the agencies, the departments that support it. So at the discretion of the county, those employees that are deemed to be essential for communication strategies, emergency plans of any capacity, is at the full discretion at the Office of Emergency Management and the leaders of the 911 dispatch, as well as the Sheriff's Department. So the limitations are respectfully ones that you set upon yourself, not ones that we set forth you upon you. We're not here servicing as a governance body for FirstNet. This is your network, which means that you manage and determine the eligibility of users utilizing county paid for services. Now, from the secondary side of this, there's a utilization of the capable utilization of personal FirstNet services that is limited. So a county clerk, for example, would not be able to have a FirstNet services on their personal device. The sheriff or any of their deputies could have their personal lines of services on FirstNet as well, paying identical agency rates, but of course, taxes and fees according to the government regulatory processes. There are exceptions outside of first responders for personal services, and that would include directors of transportation, that would include utilities and certain components of where their specific need and request that you may have of them. Obviously would be conducive to them having a device on them at all times that supersedes public traffic. So there are exceptions. However, generally speaking, county entities in its entirety can have their services on FirstNet. Personal services eligibility for FirstNet is limited based upon specific role or duty to society. Does that adequately answer your question?
Yep, that sounds good, Rory. Thank you.
Okay. And you have a prime example in your county. The town of Hayden has its public administration, its public works, and their town law enforcement are all on FirstNet. So they take a collective example.
This is Mo. One comment that I would have is talk about this. I believe my initial thought would be I would like to have, if you're an emergency support function lead in the EOC, as well as or on the incident management team, I think those individuals should also have the FirstNet phone.
I have a question for Robert or Rory. Are there data limits that, if exceeded, incur additional expenses?
Yeah,
that's a very important question.
Yeah, Rory, I can address that one. The commissioner, there is no data limits, as some of the other carriers tend to limit or slow your data speeds down after a certain point. One of the huge benefits with FirstNet is there's no limitations at any point. Now, of course, this isn't designed to have a live feed camera, you know, down Main Street, but we do have different plans for that. But at any point, any of the in-vehicle or any of the other units that you tend to carry have no limit and will never be throttled or slowed down at any point. And then of course the priority and preemption and all the data is nationwide. So if you ever do any sort of mutual aid, whether it's within route or, you know, County of Denver Summit, you name it, you'll have all of these benefits and priorities nationwide. So again, all the benefits that come with FirstNet are not just limited to the county, they're limited. They include nationwide service. So again, no limit, and the benefits can go wherever you go.
Thank you. I understand the advantage of having priority access over public traffic across the network. Is there any risk of the reverse, that the use of this bandwidth by public agencies could somehow degrade the experience for private users?
Now, the benefit with FirstNet and some of the other ones is that you're going to see it's basically an added bandwidth that we've added to the network, right? So it's priority only in times of the call. So you shouldn't see any degradation to private usage at all within the county.
And if you were to see that challenge ever occur, and again, like Robert said, not a possibility, the level of financial or punitive aspects from the federal government onto AT&T would not suffice our cash reserves.
Any more input from staff? Commissioners, any questions for staff or the FirstNet representatives?
So I guess my comment or question goes back to the question that I had, who gets on this thing? And so I guess, and who's the gatekeeper on that? And who's,
yeah.
Well, I assume that's going to be Jason, I assume. So maybe.
I think, you know, as Rory stated, this is your network, right? The benefit with FirstNet is it works in conjunction with first responders. So you with great power comes great responsibility. So you guys can manage it and control it as you deem necessary. FirstNet and our team is not going to come in and tell, you know, Sheriff Wiggins that he has the wrong person on it. You know, Jason, Sheriff, you guys have control over the network itself. And that's ultimately what it was designed for, right? You're not going to hear any of us saying, well, you can't have this person and you can have this person. It's designed for public safety, but it's also designed for people that help during non-emergency times. So for example, you've got, you know, the PD and the sheriff, but they also need mutual support from the water department, public works, any other agency that might support during any kind of emergency. All of these entities are eligible for being on FirstNet, as, you know, at any point, the sheriff and, you know, the Office of Emergency Management can call on, you know, snowplow removal, water department, public works, you know, Xcel Energy. A lot of these entities are eligible for being on FirstNet. But again, that's where we give you the ability to control the users that are on it.
To that point, if we chose to add 2, 3, 5 devices to what the current plan is showing, is that just strictly an incremental cost?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So this quote was based on the number of lines of services that communications in the sheriff's department had. But for example, if you had identified additional users that you needed to have put on immediately, incremental cost from a data plan. So $39.99 is a flat. So there's no quantity discount from the unlimited plan perspective. Those are just linear. Hardware too. We've committed. So we'll talk a little bit about credits here. We've committed to the subsidy of your hardware of purchase based on our posted list pricing. The IBR 900s are the bigger component in the area of interest from the sheriff's department because those are substantially subsidized. If you look at the actual, there's a credit table here and it can share with you this updated file after the meeting. But there is an instant credit off of $300 of the $375 off of $786. So that is a termed offer from us. That has to have that offer submitted to us before the end of the month of August for those specific devices. And then the $75 comes on after 3 months of usage. So those post After 3 months of full usage, a credit appears on the account in the fourth to the fifth bill cycle. And we'll have a table that shows you exactly how credits are added onto the account. I know Matt Hayden and I had, and the sheriff and I have had long conversations about how those terms work. Now, if you're looking at expansion, there are a few things. From the month of August, we have the same incentives aligned for you as long as the county is making the partial transition over here with their existing sheriff. I believe it's 40, the combined outside of the cradle points, the 43 units. So the sooner the purchase, the faster the credits appear. But if you needed to add on incremental things, additional identified users, laptops, you just need to have that supplied back to us and we can add those in specifically.
What's the projected lifespan of these pieces of equipment?
Your cradle points carry an average of 5 to 7 years lifespan. So the current devices you have now are the IBR 1100s. And those are roughly, and Sheriff, you'll probably know more specifically, they've been out of production for 3 years. Those are likely approaching 7 years of age, 5 to 7 years of age. But the manufacturers and technology and its evolution on industrial side communications devices carry a much longer lifespan than your normal handset. If you think about your own personal mobile handset, I'm assuming you might have had that on average maximum of 2 to 3 years. More likely not, you had it for approximately 2 years. And that's just more conducive to the aspect of lithium batteries and their own life cycles.
So this is Sheriff Wiggins. Am I unmuted?
You're good. We can hear you.
Okay. So yeah, Rory, I think you're correct. I don't know exactly what the lifespan is on these. Robert from IT could answer that question a lot better than I could, but I do know they're scheduled for replacement next year, and I don't know if they're 5 years or 7 years, but it seems like we have probably had those units since we implemented Spillman, and that's been at least 7 years. So, but to also to talk to address Doug's question, you know, when we were talking about all the details here, I could definitely see where many other departments could benefit from this changeover, and I, as I kind of alluded to earlier in my initial presentation, that I could definitely see, you know, our IT department, public health, even you guys as commissioners playing in the role or, you know, substantiating the role of public health and a few other departments that were essential during this COVID crisis. But I didn't want to throw everybody into this scenario at first. I figured that we would use ourselves as a guinea pig. And if it really benefited and turned out well, I perceived seeing the entire county move over to the FirstNet. But I definitely see the opportunity for other departments to participate in this as well.
I have a question on that point. I know that's not what's being proposed today, but a lot of those folks don't have county issued cell phones right now. So that would be a pretty big change. So definitely, I mean, I know that's not what's being requested today, but just for consideration.
Well, hopefully we don't have too many more scenarios or natural disasters like the COVID. I think that's kind of stressed us out all pretty much to our limits, but you know, we can't take that for granted. But
yes, I agree wholeheartedly that hopefully we don't have anything else like COVID ever again.
Robert, did you have any comments you wanted to add to the conversation?
No, other than I do see the value in the FirstNet network for first responders. Just keep in mind that the money coming out of the 21 budget. So we do have 5-year life on those critical points, plus the routers. The money is there, but it will be pulled out of the 2021 budget for the initial.
All right. Any more questions before we talk about next steps? I'm sure that we would want legal to have an opportunity to look this over. My understanding is that we have roughly 30 days in which to make a decision. So this could be brought back to the commissioners as an agenda item as a decision item in a couple, 3 weeks.
So is it an agenda item today, I guess? So,
you know, I guess if given the fact that we have a little bit of time to review this, and I appreciate the presentation, it feels like a pretty full presentation. I guess I'm just always like to sleep on something if I have the opportunity before I make a decision. And certainly we would want legal to weigh in, but I'm open to comments from the sheriff about that.
So I guess,
Tim, are you? Go ahead, Doug.
No, I'm just. Maybe you have a comment too, Sheriff. But I guess, Tim, my comment is you know, based on legal review, and I don't know what else we can know or find out. I guess we can prove it today, based on you know Eric's review and legal department's review and approval. So.
Commissioner Melton, how do you feel about that?
I'm fine with this and whatever needs to be done. I guess I assume there's a contract that needs to be signed at some point, maybe not, but I mean, I feel comfortable with the sheriff and Jason and whoever else moving forward, whatever way they need to. And if they need anything else from us, then like, I don't know if they just need a head nod or if they need us to sign something. So, but I'm fine either way.
Just real quick, we at 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 First Net, we're not requiring you to sign any contract. So that's NASPA, you've already opted into this at the state level. It's a contract you already function off of. So we're not looking for any signatures.
So the head nod is the one we're looking for. And on the only thing we were looking at, and as we, again, going through these credits and adjustments, as I alluded earlier, these ended back in June. And the department that on our side is given the extension was asking for maybe some of the devices to show some type of, you know, hey, as they continue to extend this, and we know you want to think about the cost of the cradle points, which is the more upfront cost of the $21,000+. The handsets do not require any sort of upfront cost. Those are basically given to the department in order for them to get the transition started. Now we are pushing up against the month of July. So we're looking from the county to just give us a nod to say, yes, let's start with the devices. Let's not order the 21,000 in the hardware, but let's just start allowing the sheriff to transition the handsets, which are gonna be, again, no cost. And then you can think about for the next 30 days on the actual 21,000 for the cradle points, and those are the in-vehicle devices. So that's, I think, what we were looking at of this call today.
Commissioner Corrigan, this is Jason. I have a comment, if I may.
Oh, please, Jason.
So I think all of us, myself, Mo, the sheriff, Robert, was okay with it from the IT standpoint. We wanted to just move forward with it, and the $20,000 threshold is what got our attention to make sure that we're complying by a county purchasing policy, and that you guys were on board with what staff wanted to do, essentially. I mean, I think it would be, if you guys are comfortable with it, I think that if we could get some official motion to go ahead and move forward, my request is just to go ahead and do it, unless the commissioners feel like we need to go some other route. And, you know, if you needed additional information before you signed on to what we wanted to do. I'm hoping I explained that well enough.
Yeah, I think we're hearing a pretty strong endorsement from staff across the board that this is a good way to go, and the financial impact to the county seems to be negligible, and it's hard to come up with an argument why we should not move forward. So here I go, I'm nodding my head.
The net result was a positive variance for us in the end, just that initial bill for $21,000 and paying that and then getting credits later, that was our concern, I think, from my perspective anyway.
So I hear Jason saying he'd like us to just make a motion of approving that initial expenditure with the understanding that there will be a rebate later. Is that, yeah?
Are you prepared, Commissioner?
I'm ready, Tim.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve staff's recommendation to change providers to FirstNet, and including the purchase of the equipment to replace and upgrade the Route County Sheriff's Office Comm Center and Coroner's cellular and data systems in 2020, recognizing that there is an expected cost savings to Route County after the rebates and incentives have been applied.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any more discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you, Rory, Robert, and thanks to Route County staff. Thank you, Sheriff. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you all, folks. Thank you all for this. We'll talk to you later, and we'll depart the call.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.
Thanks, Roy. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Appreciate everybody's time. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioners. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Okay, we're on to our COVID work session. What do we have for today?
I have a couple of questions, which I think are for Mark.
Go ahead.
So, Mark, the first thing is, you know, I think we all know that there were some staff concerns related to the departure of some of our public health staff. Just wanting to follow up on exit interviews and if there are items that need to be addressed. I don't know, you know, the commissioners have at some, Doug especially, have at various times expressed interest in knowing what's in exit interviews. I don't know what's the typical, you know, what would be appropriate, but just want to make sure that anything that was brought up in those exit interviews is being addressed, and would welcome your thoughts on whether, you know, the commissioners need to be apprised of any of that or not.
We, Beth, we've received an exit interview from our public health nurse. To my knowledge, I have not seen one yet from Carrie Ladreau. Certainly more than happy to share those with either of you. I can tell you that I've gone through and reviewed thoroughly the exit review from our public health nurse. And really, I think from the comments you've already received, there's no surprises. It's the same comments that you've heard on an ongoing basis about that we want more staff, we want more resources, we believe that it puts too much burden on us individually if we don't have all these additional resources. We've asked them for them since last year, and it's the same theme that we've discussed here on an ongoing basis for several weeks. So there's no surprises there. I'm happy to share it with you if you like, but I was not in any way surprised by the comments that were contained therein.
Yeah, and I assumed you were following up on it. I guess wanted to, just for my own peace of mind, confirm that. I do think, I remember seeing an email that Carrie sent where she did indicate that she had filled out her exit interview paperwork or something. It was, she, like on her last day, she sent all of us, I think, a long email about just some final things and indicated that she had done that. So probably need to review those as well. I know this is something Doug has feelings about, so I just wonder if he has any comments.
Well, I've had some desire to see the exit interviews for everybody. It's, you know, it's really, I mean, how do we learn from what we did or do or whatever if we don't have to participate in the analysis of a departing employee? So, yeah, I've asked for these all along and haven't been able to achieve any of that. And it's not like we can take repercussions or vengeance or whatever on, you know, somebody leaving. I vision it more as a learning tool, and that we figure out, you know, why it didn't work out so well. So that's my intent. So anyhow.
Yeah, it's kind of falls under the heading of what emergency management does, you know, the after action review. And of course, unfortunately, we're not to after action yet, but yeah, I mean, I think we all share responsibility across the organization, whether it's staff or commissioners, for our performance, especially in the event of an emergency. And just like you said, Doug, if there's something that we could have or should have done better, we should take a look at it.
So I guess, Mark, I would just invite you to send on anything that you think would be valuable for us to hear. No, I mean, even if it's just your summary of kind of what was in there and how we believe we're addressing those concerns, I think would be appropriate. Okay, sort of on a related note, I know that I've brought this up with you several times, and I'm sorry to beat a dead horse here, but with the death at the Haven, it just reminded me that Carrie and I think Michelle had expressed how challenging it was for the public health staff when there were deaths at Casey's Pond, and just how that really wore on them and was really a challenge. And I just want to make sure we're being proactive in connecting our public health staff with the support resources we do have available. And I wanted to just express one opinion on that. I think it's been maybe stated, you know, that we have this employee assistance program. And I guess I would just say that I don't know that that's the right tool in this situation. I believe that it's really just a program that pays for some counseling sessions for staff members, and it's really just three, and they really just refer you to a local therapist. I think that it's been offered that the peer support program or whatever, I forget what it's called. I know Marnie from Steamboat Fire is responsible for that program, that really is designed for first responder kinds of situations, and has been made available to our staff. And I just want to make sure that someone has connected Roberta and our other public health staff with that resource. Because I don't know if we'll have more deaths at the Haven. I hope we don't. But I worry, based on the comments that Michelle and Carrie have made, that really was a tipping point for them, having to deal with kind of the traumatic experience of these deaths at Casey's Pond. So just want to make sure we're doing everything we can on that front. You can say something if you want, Mark. I guess maybe you don't want to. That's okay.
Just
I see a small nod. Okay.
I'm sorry. Yes, Beth, I have made mention of that, especially in the transitional phase, but I'll double up. You bet.
Yeah, I think it's a proactive too, because just a, hey, this exists if you feel like it, is not really the same as, hey, we know this is really challenging and you are operating in a really challenging scenario and would encourage you to take advantage of that. The only other thing I wanted to talk about was the contracts, and we did talk about it a little earlier, but I guess, Mark, have we resolved just even an understanding of which contracts Route County currently holds? I know that was a question that was brought up kind of in the transition, that we maybe don't have good records. Do we know? And is there anything else needed from me on that?
Beth, I sent a message earlier this morning to Roberta. And I know, again, we've got her plate heaped this high, yep, but
exactly. That's
just to say, we had a question come up this morning regarding the immunization grant. We also had the separate dialogue about the tobacco grant that may need to be shared with Moffitt County, but that we need to go back and take a look and see exactly where we are on those. And also let's loop Estella into the conversation.
Yeah.
To make sure that our admin is able to navigate that with us as well. So it's with everything else that we've got coming down the pipeline, we'll make sure that we get that on the list as well, Beth, you bet. So I don't have a specific answer for you this morning. I know we're in a transition on those grants, but we'll find out where we stand.
Well, just a couple things. I mean, it was kind of stated, we didn't think anybody really even had a copy of these contracts. And I know it's expected of our staff that contracts are being held in the legal office, that they have copies of everything. For exactly this reason, you know, that it's not just one department head that knows this information, but that we have some continuity there. So just probably that's sort of an administrative task to track those down and make sure legal does have all of those. And then I have continued to be in contact with CDPHE. And as I mentioned earlier, have a call on Monday again with chief of staff over there, and I can ask any questions we want about contracts, but the biggest thing is she was planning to connect us with the head of that preventative services division, because all of the existing contracts with Northwest Colorado Health are held in that division. And what I told her, this is sort of a question for all of you, what I told her is that was Carrie's opinion, was that we should take over those contracts. And obviously we've realized we can't do that until next year. I don't know if Roberta will share that opinion or not. And as I've started looking at some of this, I wonder if that was maybe too ambitious to think that we could just take all of these over this year. And so I do want to continue having the conversation with CDPHE, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't think we are continuing to operate under the assumption that we are for sure going to take all those over. I think we need to take a careful look at it, take a look at what staffing levels would be needed, but we do need to start now to do all the research so that if that's the direction we want to head, we're prepared to do that a year from now. Would you guys agree with that?
Totally. I mean, you know, we've been operating in the fog here for quite some time, and arbitrarily thinking that we should just take over a bunch of things from Northwest Colorado Health. The answer to that question is yes, if we think we can deliver that service efficiently and to the benefit of our constituents. But if Northwest Colorado Health is doing a fine job of it, like Doug says, there's no reason to be empire building over here, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. And I have had a little bit of a question of how much Carrie's relationship and opinion of Northwest Colorado Health has affected some of those decisions and thoughts, which is fine, but we have someone else now who doesn't have that same kind of baggage, if you will, who may have a different opinion. So I think it's worth an evaluation.
You know, I would just be happy if we could come out of the fog long enough to understand who's contracted for what and for how much. That would be a great starting point.
Well, CDPHE doesn't even seem to know. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of the problem, I would say as well. So, you know,
they can't just give us a list. It's like, it's so complicated.
And you know, it all comes back, you know, the grant funding and then building a staff on grant funding and how you, the long-term sustainability of those programs and the rest. So, yeah.
It's a little confusing because some of them they call grants, some of them they call contracts. They're all kind of the same. I don't really know. It's, you know, it's, we need to sift through it for sure. So I guess, Mark, I'm happy to keep doing whatever communication is helpful, but I also would like to bring Roberta into that loop sooner than later and possibly, you know, delegate that back to the director rather than continuing to need to be involved. But I don't want to pile her plate up any more than is necessary. And this is more of a long-term project than a short-term project, I think, except for knowing which contracts we currently hold and are responsible for delivering those services. That would be the only short-term thing. It seemed like Eric maybe had a comment on the contract side. He at least unmuted himself momentarily.
Yeah, I just FYI, Carrie, before she left, provided us, Sue and I, and I think Mark was on it too, several contracts. And so I think we have them all. I don't have VPN access right now, so I can't check our directory to see if the immunizations contract is amongst them, but I can certainly do that. There were probably eight, as I recall.
And Carrie, I have a spreadsheet that has what we believe are the current contracts as well as the ones that are currently held by Northwest Colorado Health. And I did forward that to Mark and Kathy when they had asked the question. So we have a few sources of information, but probably just need to finalize making sure we know all of that. Those are the only things I had. Thanks, Tim.
Doug, you got anything?
I didn't have anything. Yep, we're good.
Nope, I don't believe I have anything. Mark, anything you need to draw our attention to?
Not right now, Tim, thanks.
Okay, then let's adjourn and we will see you all tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thank you.